welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. In this hour, mystery from two detectives. Later on, we hear the adventures of Ellery Queen. Right now, it's Richard Diamond, Private Detective, a broadcast from their first season on NBC from November 19, 1949, part of their Sunday night lineup at 5 o'clock.
As Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Diamond Detective Agency, the Smiling Gumshoe.
Rick,
sign up for our new contest and win yourself a beautiful all-chrome, pre-tested, genuine electric chair.
Oh, lovely. What do I have to do?
Just tear off your scalp and send it along with 25 words or less why you love Richard Diamond.
I can do it in 2 words.
What are they?
You're
pretty. Oh, you win. Where do you want the chair sent, madam?
975 Park Avenue, but I think I have AC current.
No problem with the Jiffy Toaster chair. It works on any current AC DC. And we have it in 3 speeds, 45, 78, and long playing.
Oh, no. Oh, Rick, that's awful.
Hello, baby.
Hi. What are you doing?
Oh, nothing. What's with you?
Oh, I just thought I'd call and find out if I'm still going to see you tonight.
Yes, ma'am. We gonna stay in?
Well, I thought I'd have Francis fix dinner and we could sit around and listen to records or something, but if you'd rather go out, I...
No, baby. I think that would be lovely. And so does my bank account.
Oh, broke again?
Not quite. A little bent. I hope the next client I get has a big fat trust fund.
Well, don't you worry about it. I'll see you around 8.
Okay. Bye, baby.
Bye.
Now, let's see. 6 shirts, 4 pairs of socks, and... Hey, how did that get in there? Well... Oh. Okay. Yeah?
Well, what's the matter with you?
You lost up my laundry.
What are you talking about? Today isn't Tuesday.
Okay, Walt, so it isn't Tuesday. Nothing's happening around this place. I felt like doing some washing.
Why don't you put it away and come on down here? I'll give you something to do.
What do you mean? You sound like you're surrounded by Sergeant Otis's relatives.
I got a big headache. I think maybe you can help me with it.
Trouble?
All over the place. You don't have to, but I'd like to, well, sort of kick it around with you.
Sure. I'll throw a few more things into soak and I'll be right down.
Oh, thanks, Rick.
Hey, it's really serious, isn't it?
Now, what makes you say that?
Look, Father... Every time your ulcers hold a rally and you want me to come down and join in, you say, thanks, Rick, just like I'd laid an egg or something for you.
Oh, you think you're pretty smart, don't you?
Sure. If I listen to everybody who thinks I'm not, I'd wind up playing mumbly peg in a straitjacket. I'll be right over. Well, that's the way trouble can get in the way of an otherwise quiet afternoon. Walt doesn't usually call me like that, but when he does, I know things are bound to get pretty rough. I tossed all of my shirts into soak, closed up the office. 20 minutes later, I was walking into the squad room of the 5th Precinct Police Station. I spotted Sergeant Otis hopping around like a crapshooter on his 10th pass. Well, what's with you, Otis?
Oh, don't bother me now, Shamus. I gotta get these reports into Lieutenant.
Well, get you. What's the matter? Did you suddenly discover you were working for the police department?
Now that's very funny. Ha, ha, ha. Okay, you gotta laugh. Now beat it. The lieutenant expects you.
Well, all right. But for Pete's sakes, Otis, stop acting like that and don't bust into the lieutenant's office like that. He'll swear you've been doped and start an investigation.
Shama, someday I ain't even going to bother to answer you.
Sergeant, the day you don't open your mouth to say something stupid, the whole world will start singing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And while I think about it, why don't you start combing your hair?
What's the matter with it?
Looks like a mattress after the lions got through with it.
Oh.
Hello, Walt.
Hello, Rick. Sit down.
Oh, maybe I should have worn black. That or a propeller on my hat. First, I run into Otis, acting like he was shot out of a cannon. Then I waltz in here, and you give me that big hello like you just discovered a body in your desk.
Land Jacoby is back in town.
What?
Yes.
Oh, but we got an indictment on him. Got him deported 6 years ago.
Look, Rick, there's no mistake. One of our stoolies brought us word.
Oh, but that's crazy. Jacoby knows the feds will pick him up in a second. How'd he get back in?
Who knows? Florida, maybe. Last we heard, he disappeared in Italy. And about 6 months later, we got a report he was seen in Cuba.
Now, are you just going to take the stoolie's word for it? What else have you got?
I got three bodies to date, and they're all very dead.
Jacoby?
It's got to be.
Why?
Well, the first two are the guys that turned state's evidence and helped to put Jacoby away. You remember them, Ross and Kreisel. Jacoby swore he'd get him someday.
Who's the third?
The stoolie who gave us the tip. Walked out of the station and... somebody with a Thompson scattered them all over the front steps.
Right in front of the station?
Yeah, it'll be in the evening papers. The commissioner is very unhappy.
How about the feds? Are they working on him?
Up to their necks, but nobody can find out how he got in or where he might be hiding out. Oh, here's something else that makes us sure it's Jacoby. In this town, there are at least five of Jacoby's old mob. The minute this thing broke, we started to check. They've all disappeared.
You think they're organizing again? Oh, Walt, come on.
Rick,
now.
I don't know what to think. That's why I wanted you to come down. You're one of the guys who worked on the Jacoby case. You remember a lot about it.
Well, sure, but... oh, now you can't tell me Jacoby is going to try to start operating again. It's a one-way pass to that little green room up at Sing Sing.
I know it, but you tell me. I don't know how to figure it.
You can't find anybody else who's seen Jacoby.
No, just the stoolie. He's going to make a swell witness.
Yeah. Lieutenant.
Yeah?
We just got a report on the teletype.
Jacoby?
Yeah. Florida reports the body of a man found out in the Biscayne Keys. They checked and found out he was a Cuban. Chartered boats for fishing trips. And the immigration boys checked with the authorities in Cuba, and it turns out that this dead guy took a party of two out for a trip and never showed up again.
Wait a minute. You said a party of two?
Yeah, a dame and a guy.
Well, what makes you think the guy with the dame was Jacoby?
Because the description fitted Jacoby exactly. And the feds say that Jacoby married a dame in Italy. And the dame that got on the boat fits the wife's description.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rick...
that's ridiculous.
Okay. We now agree on two things. Leon Jacoby is back in the States, and it's ridiculous. Will you give me a hand? I need somebody who really knew Jacoby.
Hey, Diamond, did you really know Jacoby?
Sure, Otis. We used to go out and shoot dumb police sergeants together.
Oh, hey, Lieutenant. Why don't he ever give me a straight answer?
Because it wouldn't fit your crooked head. Now go out and dig up some more reports.
Okay.
All right, Walt. Now let's say Jacoby's going to start operating again. He's made sure of one thing. Nobody who's seen him is alive enough to testify.
So?
So this. I'll 8 to 5, Jacoby's going to make a quick haul someplace and do one more killing.
You expect the killing?
I expect an attempt. He's gotten two of the guys who put him away. He's just got one more guy to tag.
He said he'd do it himself and with a knife. That means he's got to find you.
Yeah. The haul must be really important for him, the risk coming into the States. He probably needs money to keep going, so he'll pull off the job and then try to get me.
And he'll leave the country the same way he came in. Nobody can ever swear they saw him.
Except the five guys in his mob. I think he'll kill every one of them, too.
That's a lot of doing.
Jacoby's a lot of killer. Now, we've got to find out where at least one of those guys is. We'll find Jacoby and try and stop the slaughter.
Yeah, but you've got to watch your step, Rick. There's no telling when he's going to pull off the job and try to go to work on you.
Look, I'm not happy about it. I'm really the guy who's responsible for putting Jacoby away, and I know him pretty well. He's got a vendetta, Walt. And guys like Jacoby don't figure they're their brother's keeper. The score is 2 out of 3 with 1 to go. He'll try his best to kill me and even it up.
Well, what do you say we start?
I don't know. Oh, give me a list of the five guys you think are with Jacoby and all the information on them you got.
It is right here.
All right. Put two of your best men on these three guys at the bottom of the list, and you and I will start with these two on top.
Okay, but I hope we find Jacoby in time.
Walt, so do I. The way he uses that knife, I'll have to have all my clothes made out of bandage. Walt assigned two of his best men to start checking on the three names at the bottom of the list, and we took off for Flatbush. Our first man was a hoodlum named George Vail, and one of his favorite hangouts was a pool hall on Church Avenue.
Snooker or straight pool?
We want to talk.
You want to talk? Go over to the park. Get yourself a box.
Oh, look, your wisecracks can only give you a hollow mouth. Show him the badge, Walt.
Oh, cops. Well, what do you want?
You know a man named George Vail?
Nope.
Let's go.
Hey, wait a minute.
Look, I'm not going to fool around. The answers here will be a lot easier. We know Vail comes here a lot. If you don't want to tell us about him, the boys at the station have got time to help your memory along.
You can't haul me in. What's the charge?
Withholding police evidence. That can get you a couple of years.
Let's go.
Hey, wait a minute. Okay.
Okay, what?
Oh, wait a minute. I just want to be sure no one sees me talking to you. Okay. I don't know much. Vail ain't been in here for a couple of days.
Where does he live?
I don't know. I swear I don't, but I do know it's in the neighborhood. Sometimes I see him coming out of a little delicatessen across the street with a bundle of groceries.
Let's go, Walt.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Sporty. It's guys like you who make the police department such a happy little group.
So, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Do you own this place?
Yes, there's something wrong.
Does a man named George Vale come in here much?
Sure. I'm sending him over stuff lots of times. It's up 2 blocks, but he ain't there.
How do you know that?
Because his wife, she's coming in for the last couple of days. She said he was out of town on business.
What is Vale's exact address?
Here, I'll write for you on a piece of paper.
What time do you got, Rick?
2:30.
I hope you catch him for whatever he's done that no good.
We'll have to ask you not to mention this to anybody.
Come on, Walt.
Are we going down to see Vale's wife?
No, I got a better idea.
Don't you think she'd know where Vale is?
Maybe, but she's not going to tell us. But if we throw a scare into her, she might tell her husband something.
If she knows where he is.
Get Otis down here with a recording outfit. We'll wait until we see her leave the apartment and bug the place. No sense in tailing her. If Vale is with Jacoby, he wouldn't give her the address.
Maybe he didn't tell her anything. Maybe he just took off.
That's a chance we got to take. On the way down to the Vale address, put in a call at the precinct.
Right. KXKB to KQAR. I'm at the corner of Flatbush and Church. Have Sergeant Otis report to me on a code 3 and tell him to step on it.
Walt finished his report. We both went over and talked with the landlady in Vale's building. She told us that Mrs. Vale was still in her room and gave us an accurate description. Also, she agreed to pull down her window shade when Mrs. Vale left the building so that there wouldn't be a chance of missing her. Then we went back to the car to wait. In about 15 minutes, Otis showed up carrying a small portable recorder.
Here you are, Lieutenant.
All right. Get in the back seat.
Yeah. We're going to wire somebody's apartment?
No. I just thought it might be fun to play cops and robbers. Now, relax. We might be here for quite a while.
Not so long, Walt. Look. There goes the landlady's signal.
Yeah. Mrs. Vale should be... There she comes.
Yeah. Otis, get set. We got to go up there and plant a bug before she comes back.
I'm set.
I got 4 cars at the intersections just in case she's got a car. If she walks, I got 4 men to tailor, depending on her direction.
Yeah, she's crossing the street.
KXKB to KQAR. Cars 7, 9, 3, 14. Stand by. Rick, you notice, get up there with a bug.
Right. Come on, Otis.
Yeah. Right with you.
Attention. The suspect is turning into Church Avenue, heading for New Lot. Wrong. 5 feet 4, wearing checked
coat and
black
band. In here, Otis.
Yeah.
Well, this is her room. The landlady said you'd unlock it for us as soon as Mrs. Vale left the building. Bingo. Go on in.
Okay.
Now, plant it just like you knew what you were doing, Sergeant. I'll take the box down in the basement where we can listen. Give me 5 minutes and then give me a quick test.
How long have I got to set it up?
Who knows? Don't worry about it too much. If Mrs. Vale comes in, just tell her you're selling tape recorders.
Oh, she won't believe that.
Otis, with your face, you'll have to believe something as stupid as that. I dropped the wire out of the window and went out and down into the basement. It was a slipshod way of wiring a room, but we were in a hurry and it would have to be enough. I set it up and waited for Otis to start crooking.
Okay, Diamond. I'll start counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5...
6.
Hey, I think I hear something coming. I'm going out the window. I'll see you in the basement.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Gee, she nearly caught me. I come down the fire escape.
Well, come on in.
Yeah. Hey, how's it working?
All right. Listen.
Hey. She ain't got a bad voice.
You probably got me plugged in with Morton Downey.
What are we going to do, just sit here and listen?
The lieutenant's going to give Mrs. Vale a scare, Otis. Then we're going to listen.
I don't get it.
Shh. That's Walt.
Who's there?
The police, Mrs. Vale.
Huh? Oh, well, wait just a minute.
Hey, it sounds pretty good, don't it?
Shut up, Otis.
Yeah?
I'm looking for your husband, Mrs. Vale.
He isn't here. He's out of town. What's wrong?
Wanted.
For what?
Murder. Mind if I come in?
Got a warrant?
Okay, make it tough. Where's your husband?
I told you.
Well, we're out of town.
You didn't tell me.
Okay, I'll be back with a warrant.
Now we'll see if it works. Okay, Otis. Stay here and keep this thing going. I gotta get back to the lieutenant.
Did it work?
Yeah, like a dream. She called Evergreen 33349 and talked to George.
I'll check the number. You start driving north, so we'll be in the general exchange area. KXKB calling KQAR, code 600.
We headed across town while Walt put in the code to the precinct. In less time than it takes Sergeant Otis to say, oh, yeah, we had our address. Well, wouldn't you know it, another pool hall.
Yeah, guy must like the game.
Hope he's in.
Pretty crowded, I don't... Oh, yeah. Yeah, there he is.
He sees us. He's going for the back door. Let's grab him.
Right.
Hey, let me go.
All right.
Off me. Are you busting my arm?
Just take it easy, Vale. All we want to do is talk to you. Come on, outside.
Okay.
Go on, Vale. In the car.
Quit shoving. I'm going.
Walt, help me.
No, Rick.
Where did that shot come from?
Got Vale in the chest. Yeah, across the street. Stay down.
Look, Vale, you're not going any place now. We know you're working for Jacoby, and we know he's close. The guy who just shot you is working for Jacoby, too. You're not going to cover up for a louse who just fingered you, are you?
Jacoby's looking for you, too, Diamond. He's going to cut you up bad.
Where's the hideout, Vale?
I'm going to put in an 800 on this, Rick. I want this whole area surrounded.
Come on, Vale. Where's Jacoby?
155.
Vale. Oh, swell.
Repeat, code 800 from Central Park West to 10th. From 59th Street to 64th Street, KXKC. Now at Pool Hall, 9th Avenue, 60th Street. Okay, Rick, what's with Vale?
Yeah, nothing.
Dead?
Yeah. Gave me half of Jacoby's address, 455, and then made the trip.
455? Well, come on, there can't be too many 455s within walking distance.
What about Vale?
Yeah, I'll call him for the wagon.
I'll start checking apartment numbers.
Now, you wait a minute. You better take it easy. Jacoby would like nothing better than to have you go knocking on his front door.
If I know Jacoby, Walt, he's got the radio on, and he knows just what you're doing. Besides, that finger man will tell him about Vale. Somebody's got to find him before he makes a break. He's done enough killing.
Well, if you do run into something, you wait for the boys.
Walt.
Yeah?
I took off and started checking addresses that began with 455. The first was Cold Turkey, nothing but a married couple who looked like they were in training for Madison Square Garden. I moved on. Somewhere in that neighborhood, Leon Jacoby was listening to his radio.
Car 3, code 800, 455 to 61st Street. Car 16, 17 and 18.
Shut it off, Jane.
61st
but Leon,
Avenue, same
what's wrong
code.
With this whole area?
Shut it off.
All right. I wish the boys would get back.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, who is it?
Eddie, boss.
Okay.
Boss, the cops...
Come in.
Two cops picked up Vale in the pool hall.
Oh, so that's what it's all about. Let Vale talk.
No, he won't.
What do you mean?
Well, I waited across the street. Got Vale when he came out with the two pigs.
Oh, you did, huh? Well, you did me a favor, Ed.
When I figured you didn't want anybody around that might squeal... You know, Vale, wife and everything.
Yeah. You know what else she did, Ed?
What?
When you plugged Vale, you brought the whole New York police force right down to my neck.
Huh?
Yeah. So, I gotta return the favor.
Well, what do you mean? I just didn't think.
No, you didn't.
Leon, come on. We gotta get out of here.
Will you shut up?
Hey, now, wait a minute. What's with you?
I got a present for you, Ed.
Huh?
Leon!
Huh. No, boss. Put that knife away.
Sure.
Oh, Leon.
Oh, no.
What's the matter with you?
What did you do that for?
I'm in a tough spot. I go faster alone, baby.
Alone?
Yeah, baby.
You mean...
Yeah, that's right.
You'd leave me.
Look, I got no choice. You know how it is, kid. One might get through, but two, no chance. Nothing to say, baby?
Yeah. Go on, get out.
Just like that, huh? Then what would happen to you? You might help the cops find me, huh? Tell me, aren't you a little scared?
No. Just sick. I've been sick since we got here. I wish I'd known what you were really like. I'd have laughed at you when you asked me to marry you.
Oh? Well, go on, baby. Laugh now. Maybe it'll help. Well, go on. Laugh your head off.
Nothing funny? You're trying not to act scared. Jacoby don't scare you none, huh? Now I laugh. You're scared plenty because you think I might kill you. Well, say something. Don't just stand there. You're scared. You gotta be scared. Everybody's scared of Jacoby.
Yeah.
You slapped Jacoby. Okay, baby. Nobody slapped Jacoby. Not you, not the cops, not anybody. Maybe you like to beg me not to kill you, huh? Go ahead, go on, beg. Oh, okay. I think about you when I'm back in Firenze, baby. Arrivederci.
Jacoby, hold it.
What?
Stop, Jacoby.
Jacoby had waited 6 years to get a crack at me, and it looked like he was going to finally get his chance. The alley was a dead end. I stopped and listened. The back of the alley was stacked with boxes, and along the sides, garbage cans. He could have been hiding anywhere along the line.
I'm coming in, Jacoby. You want to give it up, or do you want to play? The block's surrounded.
Okay. I ain't got a gun.
Come on out.
All right. Only don't shoot, Diamond.
Walk over here.
Hey, you see, I ain't got a gun. I don't shoot, please.
Shut up, slob, and start walking out.
What you gotta act like that for, huh, Diamond?
Come on, Jacoby, move.
So, what do you cops got against me? What'd I do, huh?
Nothing, Jacoby. Not a thing. Start moving.
Well, why you gotta get so tough? Or maybe you're scared.
Scared to death. Now, if you don't hurry up and move, I'm gonna shoot you full of holes. I'm so scared.
All right, Diamond, all right. I ain't got no gun, so you can push me around like that. What are you going to do to me, huh?
Why, not a thing. Haven't you heard? City went out and bought you a yacht. They like the way you kill people, so they're going to give you the yacht and send you back to Italy. Now walk out of that alley.
Okay.
Now you dirt.
Over here, Walt. Over here.
He pulled his knife on you, huh?
Yeah, I didn't think I'd see it.
Well, you're lucky you're dead.
Yeah, well, I expected it. There used to be an old saying 6 years ago. When Leon Jacoby wants you dead, he'll use a knife and you'll lose your head. Now, he should have remembered. I keep up on slogans.
Oh, Rick, that's an awful story.
Well, you wanted me to tell you about it.
But it's so terrible, and you're so lucky.
Yeah, I guess so.
You'll certainly know better next time.
Oh, I'll never make the same mistake again.
Oh, I should hope not. Imagine being in such a hurry you've forgotten threw your socks in with all those lovely white shirts.
Plaid now, baby.
The color run that much?
Sweetheart, when I got back to the office, it looked like Picasso had been in my wash basin. My shirts are ruined.
Well, don't you fret. Mommy's going to buy little old Rick a whole new batch tomorrow.
Oh, no. Really, I couldn't. It's just against my principles to take anything from a woman.
It is, huh?
Definitely.
What's that song you're playing?
16 neck, 33 sleeve. What?
Oh, you idiot.
Oh, I bet. I dropped a real old hint.
Well, I'll drop a little old hint, too. Very subtly, of course. Sing.
Oh, baby, you're the subtlest. Climb aboard a butterfly and take off on the breeze. Let your worries flutter by and do the things you please. In the land where dollar bills are falling off the trees. On a dreamer's holiday. Every day for breakfast there's a dish of scrambled stars. And for luncheon, you'll be munching rainbow candy bars. You'll be living a la mode on Jupiter or Mars. On a dreamer's holiday. Make it a long vacation. Time there is plenty of. You need no reservation. Just bring along the one that you love. Help yourself to happiness and sprinkle it with mirth. Close your eyes and concentrate and dream for all you're worth. You will feel terrific when you get back down to earth from a dreamer's holiday.
How is that, honey? Huh?
Baby, you're the craziest.
What? Now, where did you pick up that expression?
Oh, I get around now and then. I know a couple of musicians.
Oh, I bet they all play lead kazoo.
Come here.
What do you want?
Well, I lay one on you.
What? Oh.
What'd you think of that, Pops?
You want the honest truth?
Uh-huh.
Solid.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective, on Tuned to Yesterday, an episode from their first season on the air from November 19th, 1949. Previously on radio, Dick Powell was playing a role said to be the precursor to the series as Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. It's an hour of mystery. On Tuned to Yesterday, I'm your host, Mark Levionier. And now the adventures of Ellery Queen, an interesting broadcast in terms of radio history. This is the first program of the 1944 season from April 13th of that year, and before the advent and introduction of tape or any pre-recorded material on the air, radio shows used to have to perform in East and West Coast broadcasts to match up with the time scheduled in newspaper radio listings. This episode, an interesting one insofar that the West Coast broadcast was performed first, with the East Coast taking place a day later. Usually, a program would perform the East Coast version first and then wait the 3 hours to match up the time. In this episode, Marion Shockley, Sidney Smith, Santos Ortega, and Ted DeCorsia star in The Adventure of Dead Man's Cavern.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen. Ellery Queen invites you to match wits with him as he relates another story of a crime he alone unraveled. Before revealing the solution, he stops the play, gives you a chance to solve the mystery. Our guest armchair detectives for this evening are Miss Marjorie Lawrence, Metropolitan Opera star, and Mr. Beverly Kelly of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey combined shows. And now, Ellery Queen, master detective and your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Ernest Chappell, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, tonight we tell you the strange mystery of the ghost in the mountaintop cave. I call it The Adventure of Dead Man's Cavern.
But Mr. Queen doesn't know anyone in Kenoka, New York, operator.
Kenoka, New York? Give me that phone, Nikki.
What excitement, Mr. Queen.
Hello, operator. Ellery Queen. Put her on, please.
Put her on.
Hello, Grace?
Ellery, how's the mastermind?
Grand to hear your voice, darling.
Darling?
What are you doing at your Adirondack Lodge, Grace?
Stretching my soul. How would you like to join me this weekend?
It's a date. How about my gang, Dad Veeley and my secretary?
Well,
oh,
really?
Sure, I'll have a lodge full anyway. Wait a minute, dear. I'll look up the train schedule.
You bet, darling. I'll hold on.
Ellery Queen, if you think I'm going to kick my heels around an Adirondack love nest while you and some shameless woman...
Grace? Why, Nikki, she's Dr. Grace Grayson, probably the most famous living woman physicist, an old friend.
Oh? How old?
About 50, Nikki.
Oh.
Ellery?
Yes?
There's a 9:45 out of Grand Central Saturday morning. I'll pick you and your folks up at Kenoka Station. It ought to be fun.
Grace, I don't like that laugh. What have you got up your sleeve?
Oh, fiend. The fact is, you can help catch a murderer this weekend.
I thought so. Who is he?
A gentleman known as the Strangler.
The Strangler? That sounds grim. How many people has he killed?
29 at last report. Well, see you Saturday.
I could strangle you, Grace. String me along about catching a murderer who's been dead over 100 years. Why didn't you tell me he's the ghost of a local legend?
Well, I wanted to excite your curiosity, Ellery. Refill Inspector Queen.
No mind if I do, Dr. Grayson.
I'm getting plastered on this mountain now. So you got a ghost up here, eh, Doc?
Lives in a cave near this lodge, you said?
Yes, called Dead Man's Cavern.
Your three other guests seem mighty interested in that haunted cave, Grace.
Mr. and Mrs. Gabriel and Ernest Withers?
Hmm?
Well, I suppose I ought to warn you. Hector Gabriel and Ernest Withers are supernaturalists. Spend their lives running down ghosts.
Oh.
Here they come. Going to join us on the porch, gentlemen?
Oh, Gabriel, you're a
gullible idiot. The way you were taken in by that ectoplasm trick in Seattle.
Well, you would have been fooled too, Withers.
Oh, really? Remember how I exposed that crowd of fake mediums in Nashville, Gabriel? But you were ready to tell the whole
Withers,
world.
You annoy me.
Sit down,
oh,
boys.
Oh,
now
right.
That's the way it's been with those two for 20 years, Ellery. Friendly enemies.
Mr. Gabriel, I'm told you have the largest, most valuable library of psychic works in the world.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Queen. Eh, Withers?
Lucky dog. You've got books I'd give my right arm for.
Dr. Grayson tells us you two gentlemen are up here to investigate that haunted cave, Mr. Withers.
That's right, Inspector.
We're going to conduct a scientific experiment.
Now, see here, Hector Gabriel. I'll let you and Withers turn my lodge into a psychic laboratory, but don't drag the respectable name of science into it.
Are there actually psychic manifestations, Grace?
Oh, Lord. Some lug in 1840 began strangling people in that cave, and ever since then, they've...
What's that?
Sounded like a wolf or something.
Listen. Like, that's the moan, Gabriel, the ghost sound.
Now someone's screaming. That's no ghost.
Sounds like my wife. Told her Miss Porter took a walk in the woods and...
Here they come, running. Wife, Mrs. Gabriel.
Oh, hold it, dear.
Oh, hey, hey,
oh,
Mr.
Oh, dear.
What happened?
We were walking in the woods, Inspector, when that ghastly moaning started from the direction of that cave. Mrs. Gabriel got frightened. Hector, please. Don't you and Mr. Withers go near that cave. It's haunted.
Why, hold of us. What Withers and I came here for?
Yes, Mrs. Gabriel, if those moans were made by a ghost, it's our duty to psychic science.
Now, see here. Those sounds are a natural phenomenon. Nothing ghostly about them.
Then what made that noise, Dr. Grayson?
My dear child, the cavern probably has a peculiar rock structure which causes it to catch the wind at the top of the mountain and then expel it with a moaning sonic effect.
There it is again.
Sure sounds funny, Ellery. What do you think?
I think, Dad, we'd better have a look at Dead Man's Cavern.
Grace, must we go through these woods to get to the cave?
Yes, Ellery. No way of going around it. Sheer cliff on either side.
I wonder why the moan stopped with us.
Exasperating, Gabriel.
Hold it, everybody. Someone coming. Sounds like a big, heavy man.
Wasn't the strangler supposed to be big and heavy?
Oh, nonsense, Sergeant. It must be Hank Pete. Oh, I was right. Hi, Hank.
Howdy, Professor. You hear them moans from Dead Man's Cavern, too?
Yes, we're going to the cavern now. Hank, these are friends of mine.
How do you do?
How do you do?
All right, Vili, get moving.
Strangler's getting pretty restless lately.
Huh? Say, Daniel Boone, you don't believe in this ghost bunk, too.
Man gets to believe in a lot of things, mister. Living alone up here in the hills.
Just what is the story of this strangler, Mr. Gabriel?
Well, some mountaineer, Mr. Queen, over...
Tell him, Gabriel. He lured wayfarers into the cave, you see, and strangled them for their money.
Nice fella.
What did he do with his victims' bodies?
There's a natural opening in the rear wall of the cave. Like a window.
It overlooks a lake, Inspector. The same lake that's behind my lodge.
The strangler threw his victims out of that cave window into the lake 50 feet below.
Never since them folks he strangled keep a moaning like you all heard.
Oh, of all the succotash, Hank, the brute was finally caught and hanged.
It's the ghost of the strangler. Murdered one of his victims all over again. Well... Here we are.
Right at the top of my mountain.
Why, there's a clearing here between where the woods stop and the entrance to the cave.
Hey, ain't that a wooden door covering the entrance to the cave?
Yes, Sergeant.
Let's cross the clearing.
Go ahead, Willie.
How come a door, Grace?
Hank Pete knows more about it than I do.
Some city feller a few years back put the door in, charged admission to see the haunted cave.
Was his name P.T. Barnum?
One night he was in here alone, and the moan started. He lit out like a buck deer, and he ain't been seen since.
Good stout door. Let's go in.
I think I'll stick right here by the entrance.
Sergeant, you'd never make a physicist.
Or a psychic research worker, either. Interesting cavern, eh, Mr. Queen?
Yes, Mr. Gabriel, from what I can see of it in its gloom.
Solid rock. So was roof.
The roof is really the inside of the very crest of the mountain, Inspector.
And there's the window in the rear wall. Yes, this opening looks right out over the lake.
drop of 50 feet.
What kind of experiment are you gentlemen intending to conduct here, Mr. Withers?
Well, Gabriel and I plan to spend an entire 24 hours in this cave, Inspector Queen, from 6 tomorrow morning until 6 a.m. the following day.
We'll take food, water, blankets, oil lamps, and a sound recording apparatus. We want to be in here when the moaning begins.
Very scientific, you see.
Go ahead, jeer, you female Philistine.
Really? Dutch, you ain't coming in.
Well, I got lonesome out there. Say, supposing you meet up with this ghost, don't you gents think you better pack a rod just in case?
If what's making them sounds could be shot, he'd be a dead ghost long ago.
We're taking every precaution against the possibility that the moans are caused by a human agency. We pick tomorrow for our vigil because the weather forecast for tonight is heavy rain, and the rain will soak down the loose earth of the clearing in front of the cave.
Yes, get it so soft that anyone approaching the cave will have to leave footprints in the mud. Well, let's go back, eh?
But you gentlemen will leave footprints when you cross the muddy clearing tomorrow morning.
We'll cross it barefoot to identify our own prints.
Appears to me like you two fellas aim to tinker with trouble.
My dear Pete, ghosts don't scare us. Gabriel, you have that new lock we brought out?
Yes, Withers. There. And the key remains in my pocket. Well, that's all until tomorrow morning at 6. If you want to see us off, you'll have to be up early.
We'll be up early, Mr. Gabriel.
I'm sleepy, Ellery. Mrs. Gabriel and I had to double up last night, and she moaned all night long. Are the others following us?
All except Hector Gabriel. I wonder where Gabriel is. He bunked with me last night, but when I woke up this morning, he was already gone.
He must be waiting for us at the cave. Well, look, Ellery. Is that the old woodsman Dr. Grayson mentioned last night?
Hank Pete? Oh, yes. Morning, Hank. Up early to see Mr. Gabriel and Mr. Withers start there watching the cave?
Mr. Green, I just been over to the clearing at the edge of the woods. Somebody's in that cave.
What?
Cave door is open.
What's that, Hank? Cave door open?
Why, it can't be. Gabriel and I put a new lock on it yesterday, and he has the only key.
Come see for yourselves.
It must be your husband, Mrs. Gabriel.
Well, I don't understand it, Sergeant. But weren't Mr. Gabriel and Mr. Withers to go into the cave together?
Yes, we were.
Keep your shirt on, Mr. Withers.
Take a look.
The prints of a small man's bare feet.
And they go perfectly straight across the mud of the clearing to the cave door.
Just one set of prints. Ingoing.
Why, he's tricked me. His word of honor, we'd go in together. His word of honor.
I'm sure Hector wouldn't do anything dishonorable, Mr. Withers.
Well, these are his footprints, aren't they? There couldn't be anyone else's here. They're so small. Cheat.
Mr. Withers. You're a dreadful man.
Oh, it's probably a joke.
Hector Gabriel!
Mr. Gabriel! Hey, Mr. Gabriel!
Hector! Why don't you answer?
Something's wrong.
Dad, I'm crossing this clearing alone. I'll detour to keep out of the way of Gabriel's footprints. If you have to follow me, detour too.
Hi, son.
Dad, Billy.
Coming, Henry. Come on, Beanie.
I'm coming.
Something wrong, son?
What is it, Maestro?
Look. Gabriel. On the cave floor.
With all his supplies around him.
Dead. Dead about an hour, I'd say. Since 5 a.m.
Face contorted by a horrible fear.
And no wonder. Look at his neck. He's been strangled.
Well, son, I don't get it. Even these marks of strangulation are queer.
You mean the upward-pointing thumb impressions at the back of Gabriel's neck?
Yes. Why weren't the thumbprints in his windpipe?
Oh, who's that?
It's Grace Grayson, Sergeant.
You and Hank Pease didn't mess up Gabriel's footprints in crossing the clearing, did you?
No, Ellery. We detoured, too. Poor Gabriel. I can't believe it yet. Hank, look at him.
The ghost of the strangler, I told you.
Will you stop jabbering about ghosts, Daniel Boone?
You're scared.
Stop it, Hank. What are we going to do? Poor Holder's in a state of collapse. Nicky's trying frantically to calm her down, and that man Withers hasn't uttered a word since this happened. Who did it?
Come outside. I want to show you something.
What is it, son?
The
only way Gabriel's murderer could have got into the cave was the way Gabriel got in, by crossing this muddy clearing.
Well?
Well, where are the killer's footprints?
You didn't see no prints in this mud when we got here this morning, except the ones at Gabriel's bare feet, did you?
I see. Obviously, the strangler entered the cave some other way.
How, Grace? The only other opening into the cave is that natural window in the rear wall, which overlooks the lake. That opening is 50 feet above the lake at the top of a sheer cliff.
The roof of the cave. Let a rope down.
We've been up there. It's covered with smooth mud.
And no human foot ever stepped on it.
And at the sides of the cave, it's sheer precipice, too. Oh, well, of course. The killer came here during the rain, which wiped out his prints. Lay in wait for Gabriel, who came when the rain had stopped.
What happened to the prints the killer made leaving?
That's not the important point, Dad. The killer couldn't have got into the cave before Gabriel, Grace. The door was locked with a new lock, and only Gabriel had the key, which is still on his person.
Then the killer used a grappling iron at the end of a strong line.
You mean throw a line up from the lake, Grace?
Yes. Someone stood in a boat on the lake below and threw up a grappling iron which caught the window.
Guess again, Dr. Grayson. An iron would have left scratch marks on the sill of the rocky opening.
And there ain't no scratch marks.
Then how do you explain it?
You're wasting your time. Ghosts don't need grappling irons. And they don't leave footprints.
Yes, Grace. Remarkable as it seems, it looks as if Hank Pete is right. In the setup, Hector Gabriel could only have been strangled by a ghost.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Hold it, stop. You've been crying a whole day and night.
But they took Hector away, Nicky. Why don't they let me go? I don't want to stay here.
What's the inspector up to? Keep telephoning.
What's going on, Ellery?
I don't know, Grace. I'm still grappling with the problem of the strangler ghost.
Wait.
The moan from the cave again.
Oh, don't be silly, Nicky. It's the wind.
The wind, is it? It's the ghost. The ghost who strangled Hector. They can't keep us all here to be murdered. I'm going.
Where are you going, Mrs. Gabriel?
Oh, Dad.
Billy, shut that door and set your back against it.
Right, Inspector. Ghosts, huh?
Miss Gabriel, did I hear you say you were going somewhere?
Yes, Inspector. Home. And you can't stop me.
Miss Gabriel, I've done a lot of investigating by phone in the past 24 hours. One of the things I've discovered is that your husband was a rich man.
Hector, I suppose so, but...
What is it, Dad?
I've had Gabriel's will checked, Ellery. He leaves nearly his entire estate, worth a couple of million dollars, to his wife, Hulda.
You mean you think I killed Hector?
Your husband was almost 20 years older than you, Mrs. Gabriel.
Oh.
Yes, quite possible.
Why, you're crazy. Next thing we know, you'll be accusing me of strangling Gabriel.
Exactly what I had in mind, Mr. Withers.
Wait, what do you mean, Inspector?
You and Gabriel were at each other's throats for over 20 years, Withers. Enemies.
Why, we were friendly enemies.
Also, he owned something you wanted bad, Mr. Withers.
Gabriel's library. The most valuable collection of books on psychic phenomena in the world.
Right, son. One of the things I found out in the past 24 hours is that Gabriel willed his psychic library to Ernest Withers.
But that's so absurd, Inspector, to kill a man for possession of some books.
You think so, Dr. Grayson? Maybe you'll agree that your motive was stronger.
My motive? To kill Hector Gabriel?
Dad, Grace involved with Gabriel.
He was his first wife.
Gabriel's first wife? Did you know that, Ellery?
No, I didn't, Nicky. Grace.
Surely you're joking, Inspector.
Depends on your sense of humor, Dr. Grayson. Fact is, Hector Gabriel ditched you to marry Hilda.
And you know what they say about a woman scorned.
So you think I killed Hector out of revenge for having thrown me over? I can see your point, Inspector. Only I didn't.
It's not any one of us. It was the ghost, I tell you. The ghost!
Ah, that ghost story is a lot of camouflage.
Yes. One of you three strangled Gabriel in that cave. Only question is, which one?
Who would that be?
Billy, see what it is.
Right.
No. No, please don't open it.
Oh, it's just old Hank, the woodsman.
What do you want, Pete?
Thought you'd want to know.
We'd want to know what, Hank?
Right at the edge of the woods where you enter the trail from here, just a couple of yards from the lodge, there's a lot of loose stones. Them stones were slippery from the rain.
Well?
Alongside them slippery stones is a couple of small juniper bushes. They've been smashed flat. I figure it's how this fella Gabriel slipped on them stones on his way to the cave yesterday morning and fell under them junipers.
That's how that is.
It certainly is, Sergeant. In fact, it clears up the mystery.
What do you mean, Sam?
I mean, Dad, that now I know the identity of the ghost of Dead Man's Cavern. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery of Dead Man's Cavern. Have you an answer to it? Well, suppose you compare solutions with our guest armchair detective. Nikki, will you please introduce our guest?
Well, Ellery, our first guest tonight is Miss Marjorie Lawrence, famous metropolitan soprano. Stricken with infantile paralysis a couple of years ago, Miss Lawrence has fought against this dread affliction courageously and successfully, as evidenced by her recent triumph in the role of Isolde at the Met. Our second guest tonight is Mr. Beverly Kelly of the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Combined Shows, or, as all America calls it, the circus, now playing at Madison Square Garden. Mr. Kelly has described the big top to millions over the radio and is well-known author of books and stories on circus life. All right, Ellery?
Thanks, Nikki. Miss Lawrence, who strangled Gabriel?
Well, I don't think anyone strangled him. I think that he slipped and fell on those stones under the juniper bushes.
Yes?
I think the moaning sounds came from natural means somehow. The wind through the rocks or something.
Yes.
So that's what I would say.
Well, thank you, Miss Lawrence. And now, Mr. Kelly, who do you think strangled Gabriel?
Well, Ellery, if those footprints outside the cave weren't so small, I think we could blame it on Gargantua. But I think I'm going to put my money on Gabriel's first wife and say that he fell from grace.
Well, thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Well, how about it, gang? Think you've got the answer? The guests have had their say, and Ellery Queen will tell you the solution in just a few moments.
Quiet on the line.
What do you mean?
All right, I'll tell you. Now, first, let's slay the ghost. No ghost killed Hector Gabriel. The strangler's hands were human hands. They left human fingerprints deep in the flesh of Gabriel's neck and throat.
Well, sure. That's right. Then those moans we heard must have been made by the wind through the cave like Dr. Grayson said.
Right, Sergeant. Now, since the strangler had human hands, he also had human feet. And human feet leave prints in mud.
But, Ellery, the only footprints in the mud were Gabriel's. One set, ingoing.
I know. Gabriel choked in the woods and then staggered across the clearing alone to the cave to die.
Nikki, you yourself pointed out that the trail left by Gabriel's feet across the mud was perfectly straight. Men dying of strangulation don't walk in a straight line. No. When Gabriel crossed that clearing, unlocked the door, and entered the cave, he was perfectly well. So the murder was committed in the cave. And for the murderer to have choked Gabriel in the cave, he had to get there. Problem. How did the killer cross that muddy clearing without leaving footprints? And the more you think about it, the more obvious the answer gets.
Well, what do you mean?
He crossed it on Gabriel's back.
Gabriel carried him. Delry.
I know, Dad. Other theories are possible, but my theory can be backed up. What was the exact position of the strangler's thumbs on Gabriel's neck?
The thumb marks pointed upwards on the back of Gabriel's neck.
Which is possible only if at the time he committed his crime, the strangler was behind Gabriel. Strong confirmation that the strangler rode across that mud on Gabriel's back. And when Gabriel entered the cave, the person he was carrying began to choke him before even getting down.
Oh, but Maestro, how did the killer make Gabriel carry him?
Important question, Sergeant. Grown men don't play piggyback at 5 o'clock of an Adirondack morning. One person carrying another suggests that the person being carried had to be carried.
An injury?
Yes, Dad. Hank Beach just told us he'd found a place in the trail where someone had slipped on loose, wet stones and fallen into some juniper bushes. Hank opined it was Gabriel, because he thought Gabriel was alone. But since we know Gabriel carried someone, isn't it evident that it wasn't Gabriel who slipped and fell, but his companion?
The killer faked a tumble, pretended to twist his ankle or something, said he couldn't walk, and Gabriel lugged him all the way through the woods to the cave.
Exactly. And why? Deliberately to leave only one set of footprints in that mud, Gabriel's, to make us believe that the murder had been the work of a convenient strangler ghost of the haunted cave.
All right, Ellery. You've accounted for how the strangler got into the cave without leaving prints.
Yeah, But how'd he get out, Maestro, without leaving him after Gabriel was dead?
In the only way possible, through that natural window in the cave wall.
What?
Yes, for while no one could have got into the cave through the opening in the cave wall, someone could have got out simply by diving out into the lake below.
But you did all this, son.
Dad, where did Hank say he found the crushed bushes?
At the edge of the woods, as you went to the trail leaving Dr. Grayson's lodge.
Yes. In fact, Hank said it was only a few yards from the lodge. But observe, the killer pretends to injure himself a few yards from the lodge. Yet Gabriel carries him all the way through the woods to the cave. Why? Why didn't Gabriel carry him back the few yards to the house? Wouldn't he have done that if, say, his companion had been his wife or Dr. Grayson, or in fact, anyone except one person?
One person.
There can be only one reason why Gabriel carried his companion all the way to the cave. And that was because he and the killer were bound for the cave. Because he and the killer were supposed to share the cave for the next 24 hours.
Well, I'll be...
Yes. Gabriel's companion, the man who got his victim up an hour earlier than planned on some trumped-up excuse, who wanted to kill Gabriel because he hated him for over 20 years and because Gabriel had willed him his unique and valuable psychic library, that man could only have been Ernest Withers.
And there you have the solution to the mystery.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen on Tuned to Yesterday from April 13th, 1944 on NBC. And with our cases closed in this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday, I do invite you to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.